Journey Church is a community and movement, a fellowship of discovery. We desire to love well and serve often, while together we explore the adventurous love story of Jesus.
Father, our prayer this morning is that you would in fact tune our hearts to the things of God. And we think about and sing about and speak this idea of God, you sealing it for your courts. Yes, above, but really around. The idea of coming into a court and praising you like the Israelites of old. God, we thank you that you offer a seal of redemption. It's our deep desire to walk in that redemption, to stay in it, to be connected to the kingdom way. And we know our hearts are prone to wander. That line just sings off our tongues because it's so true. But Father, we claim that hope and the promise that's found in you, that you seal us and you continue to pursue us and call us and draw us to yourself. So keep like a magnet pulling us back into that deep well of relationship with you. That's our desire this morning, Father. Thank you for this time together. Speak to us from your word and from your many stories. In Jesus' name, amen. Would you be seated? John chapter 5, and we're going to begin reading in verse 1. If you've been with us for the last few weeks, I wrote a book called Love Well, and it released a few weeks ago. And so what we're doing is, rather than kind of going through what's in the book, which a lot of the book is kind of assimilated from really stuff we've talked about through the years, I thought I want to write something new that would go alongside with the theme of the book. The theme of the book is, how do I get unstuck? How do I find deep, genuine connection? And so we're around chapter 4 in becoming unstuck and really finding connection with people. And so the parallel here for us today is to talk a little bit, and I won't drop down into this in detail because the book does, but a little bit about shame and about what happens when we have brokenness. So this is a story you may be familiar with, and if you've been in the church for a long time, it's a story that's been told. But if you would with me, enter it with new eyes, with fresh perspective, and kind of use your senses as I tell the story. You know, kind of feel around, look, listen, what would it be like? The story takes place in Jerusalem and at a place called the Pool of Bethesda, which if you go to Jerusalem anytime soon, I would recommend maybe waiting a few months. but if you go to Jerusalem anytime soon, there's been excavation here, so you can actually see some of where this location is, the Pool of Bethesda, and there's, of course, lots of layers of history on top of it, but you can see some of the excavation. It's pretty cool. But this is where people would gather, and the story will climb into this a little bit. But there were in particular, John's really descriptive, actually, in this passage, where he talks about five colonnades. So picture like these coverings where people could kind of hang out. They'd be shielded from the sun or rain. I asked Stephen Proctor, he kind of coordinates a lot of our experience design here, if he could have it rain outside for us. So that might happen, maybe in a little bit. Stephen, if you keep working on that. You did it earlier. I was really appreciative for that. Just to kind of really just be in the story, feel what it might be like as I read along, all right? Sometime later, Jesus went up to Jerusalem for a feast of the Jews. Now, there is in Jerusalem, near the Sheep Gate, a pool, which in Aramaic is called Bethesda, and which is surrounded by five covered colonnades. Here, a great number of disabled people used to lie, the blind, the lame, and the paralyzed. So do you have the picture? The pool, probably fed by a spring, and occasionally it would bubble up, and all these who were hurting surrounding it. Sometimes you're having to step over and through people. Like if you ever saw images of what happened in the Superdome during the flood, like picture that image, just people everywhere. And they're here because, for some of them, they superstitiously believe there's something about the pool. When the water would turn, when the water was stirred, they believed an angel came and stirred the water. And the first people who made it into the water while it was still stirring could be healed. And some were actually healed. You go to the water to have healing power? Perhaps. probably it was more the placebo effect. They believed they'd be healed, so it's like your doctor giving you a pill and saying, oh, if you take this, you're going to feel so much better. Oh, thank you, I just needed a pill, and it's just sugar. And but psychologically, you thought it would heal you, and so you got healed. This is basic psychology, right? Well, the same thing happened here. So people would gather and think, if I could get into the water, I'd be healed. So that's so you got the picture. Verse 5, one who was there had been an invalid for 38 years. And when Jesus saw him lying there and learned that he had been in this condition for a long time, he went to him and he asked him, do you want to get well? Is that the rain, Stephen? Thank you. Perfect timing. Really great. Oh, see, we really go to no expense here at Journey. We might even knock the lights out. Be kind of cool. Hope we don't do that. This question is the centerpiece of the entire story. It might actually be the centerpiece for our stories. Do you want to get well? Sir, the invalid replied, I have no one to help me into the pool when the water is stirred. While I'm trying to get in, someone else goes down ahead of me. Then Jesus said to him, get up, pick up your mat, and walk. At once the man was cured. He picked up his mat and walked. And the day on which this took place was a Sabbath. There's another story that follows. This really isn't the end of the story, and there's a whole lot more here. And if you were here last week and we talked a little bit about Sabbath, you can make some connections. So if you want to climb into the story, that might be a fun place to study this week. We don't have time for today, but there's more there. This question, do you want to be healed? Do you want to be loved well? Some of us are stuck. When we are sick, emotionally or physically, our lives begin to revolve around our sickness. Now, this is true, right? Any kind of sickness, whether it's emotional, spiritual, physical. My son Tyler, I have 18-year-old, so the second one by a minute. They were playing with friends a week ago. You know, 18, you think you're done with slip and slide, but apparently not. And no good thing ever happens when someone rolls out a slip and slide. It's not good. The designer was an evil man who went, how do I injure young children or teenagers? So anyway, they rolled the slip and slide. They've been playing on the thing for about 30 minutes. They're running, jumping, sliding, you know, a bunch of their teenage friends just having a ball. 30 minutes in, like they've been doing it. For whatever reason, Tyler was the one. He decides to go and he's going to plant and probably do some kind of flip thing or whatever else. And as soon as he plants, nobody happened to notice the broken wine bottle laying in the field at the edge of the slip and slide. So Tyler's telling me a story. He said he literally was running and then he planted with his foot. You know that crease right here between your toe and the rest of that? Exactly that crease right there. Now, somebody told me that Gary was telling a story a few weeks ago about blood and people started passing out, so I'm going to not go into detail. But you got the picture. He cut it bad. Jordan told me last time, like, what happened when he cut his toe? He goes, he slid down the thing, blood spurting out everywhere, and he goes, Jordan, I think I cut off my toe. Well, at least he was calm. So our entire lives in our home, our lives have changed because of Tyler's toe. How we get in the car, what car we use, how long it takes to get ready, where we have to move Tyler around. Tyler's life has drastically changed. We're in the rec soccer league. You know, he's on the sideline. You know, he also plays flag football. And it happens to be the same night. So my wife and I went to support our one son, Jordan, because Tyler's on the sideline. This is on Thursday night. So we did the soccer game. Then we go to the football under the lights. So mom and dad, we'll support Jordan. And we're on the sideline. And the coach comes up to us. He goes, hey, we don't have enough players. Can you guys play? And I was like, yeah, sure, I'll play. And Angie's like, you want me to play? He's like, yeah, we got to have a girl, too. I'm like, well, this is going to be fun. So the George family played flag football last week while Tyler sat on the sideline. Our lives have just changed because of Tyler's illness. How many for you, you might go, oh, actually, I've had years that have gone by, and my whole life revolves around my illness. And maybe it's not physical. Maybe it's something deeper. And maybe you're stuck. Why has it been years? For some of you, oh, it's circumstantial, or you know, I just haven't had the care, I haven't been able to find the right church, or maybe the right counselor, or the right person, or I haven't been able to connect with God, or whatever the thing is, but what has you stuck? And is it possible that sometimes we prefer to dwell in our victimization? You see, if and when Tyler heals up, the people who've been bringing him his food, his clothes, helping him with all the little life needs, all that goes away. Nobody's waiting on Tyler hand and foot anymore. He's going to actually have to go back to doing his chores around the house, being responsible on his own. Like, his life has to change, and he's going to have to take on greater responsibilities. And I wonder if sometimes some of us actually prefer illness over health. Brent, come on up here. I want you to meet a friend of mine. I was thinking about this, I was going through this morning, and I remembered a conversation Brent and I had just a couple of weeks ago, and I went, oh man, Brent's story would be so amazing. And so I walked in, but I was like, ah, you know, I had this thought like late last night. So I'm like, ah, I can't call him last minute. I walk in, he's walking around in front of him, Brent, you're here, this is a sign from God. I remembered us talking about your story and what happened. Would you tell your story? And he was like, okay. So thank you. And tell us a little bit about, in your story, the place you were stuck, that victim thing, and what changed.
Yeah, just the text today. I'm a pastor's kid. I read the Bible when I was 18, and it's amazing hearing Jamie talk because new things will jump out. But the word that jumped out at me today was paralyzed, and I have been. My trigger, I guess, or just the way I was wired up to struggle was resentment. And if I was wronged, I would just hold on to that, just carry it like a weight. Like every day I would think, I got to hold on to this because I'm right and this validates the way that I feel and it holds them accountable to this way they injured me. You know, but decades later, that's only hurting me. And it's like tunneled down so deep inside me that I'm not even acting like myself anymore. I mean, it's kind of gotten in my subconscious. And so, do you want to get well? And I do. And I'm excited to be in a place now where I'm letting go and really trying to give those things to God. And you said it, I meant to say it in first service, is you have to have more grace in your life because these people that harm you, they may have not meant to do it. And who knows what they're walking through? We're all walking down this road together with our fellow man. And sometimes we trip each other up or we shoot somebody next to us in the kneecap, you know? But there's a reason why they did that, and it might be out of their pain, you know? I used to work at Chick-fil-A, and I was a crew leader there, but Chick-fil-A is really hardcore into, like, taking care of their people and teaching them a good management skill. So when I was 15, they sent me to a Zig Ziglar conference. You know, so I really got schooled in leadership there, but as a 15-year-old. But the thing that I took away from that entire conference was in the retail world, if you have a negative experience, the odds are you will tell 9 people about it. If you have a neutral or positive experience, you will tell 0 people. We're wired to be negative. If you look at our media, if you look at our tabloids, if you look at what makes soap operas work, if you look at the things that we want to talk about at the water cooler, we're just wired up to be negative. And I've spent countless nights and I've burned so much energy in my life ruminating on my pillow at night, waiting to go to sleep because this person injured me and it was not fair. But you know, I realized I need to let it go and have grace for them, for their sake, but also for my sake, because while you're hoping for justice, you're poisoning your water hole, your well, you know, that's supposed to take care of you, but also nurture the people around you. So I wish I could get back those countless hundreds of hours that I spent dwelling on negative things, you know. but all I can do is be different today. And so the thing that I took away from Zig Ziglar and putting all the pieces together, I just got back from Focus, which was this amazing conference. If you guys are struggling and need to mind down and some of the negative things that have happened to you, come talk to me about Focus. A lot of us have gone through it at Journey. It's changed our lives. But for me, the 9-to-1 ratio of negative, I realized I wasn't letting in the beauty. I wasn't letting in the good. You have to offset the negative in the world by 9-to-1. So are we feeding ourselves in a positive way? Are we letting go of these negative things that hold us back and nobody else? And so it's been a really cool process to become unstuck. And I am, you know, blown away by that text, do you want to get well? And that's the first step.
Yeah. You know, so. Would you give him a round of applause? Thank you, bro. Amazing. Amazing. I mean, there it is. Wow, a 9-to-1 to counter our natural proclivity of the flesh. It seems to make sense then that we're instructed by Scripture, forsake not the assembling of ourselves together, to continue to praise, to continue to enter his gates with thankfulness and his courts with praise. Like the reason we get this thing about being thankful all the time is that God knew hardwired into us was this natural drift toward to what's not working. I want to give you a quote by Mark Buchanan because he says this beautifully. Sickness can actually steal the place of God. For some of you, let me say us, because I certainly could fit this category. For some of us, our illness or our dysfunction or our struggle could become our identity. And that when we interact with people and talk with them, that's the topic of conversation. Isn't that interesting? Like, what a sneaky way for Satan to create an idol. That our actual idol is our broken part of us. And that gets all the conversation, as opposed to conversation that spills out of our mouths about the glory of God. So, Mark Buchanan, sickness can actually steal the place of God. It can become the sick person's center, the touchstone by which he defines himself. Illness is a tyrant with huge territorial ambitions. It is a seductress with large designs. It wants not only the sick person's body, it wants his heart and mind and soul also. It wants to be his all-consuming passion. Not everyone wants to get well. One of the beautiful things about Journey that Randy was talking about is our willingness as a church to walk in the tension and acknowledge our brokenness. Sometimes you meet people and they want to gloss everything over and pretend everything's fine, and they actually live in a spirit of denial. Bill Wilson, the founder of AA, writes actually about this denial thing. He says this: it seems that we are not that free to be honest as people, or even aware, because most of our garbage is buried in the subconscious. So it is absolutely essential that we find a spirituality that reaches to that hidden level. If not, nothing really changes. If you're reading the Bible for just information, if this thing is kind of an academic exercise, if your faith is really a morality review, if you are involved in the church for behavior modification, you're missing it completely. There are things buried down beneath that often need healing. Now, the extreme, of course, is what I identified. And you meet people that go, well, I'm broken, so my new identity is in my brokenness. Well, that's just another form of sin. We have to constantly live in this tension that says, I acknowledge this brokenness. Again, as Randy was saying with the girls, the more they speak that out and clean it out, anything that's stuck, and be vulnerable and cough that up, it brings a healing to them because it doesn't stick. And then they go, oh, my identity's not in that consciously or subconsciously. I'm finding a new identity in Jesus. He is the author of my story. I'm going to keep leaning into the Jesus way. Spiritual practices are a part of my life, like praying, like Bible study, like going to a church, like being in a village. Those things are in my life, so I can keep leaning into the kingdom way and not found my identity in something that's gross, broken, or sick. The hardest thing about faith and spirituality, however, is that it involves people. That's the hardest thing. You know, church would be way easier if people weren't involved. Except that the church is people. And it is about relationship, and it is about connection. But what happens for a lot of us, in the beginning, Jared was here, and he was giving announcements, and he was talking about inviting you into what we call discovery here. And it's a place where you can hear a little bit more about Journey. We do it on Sunday nights in about a 5 to 6 week deal. And it's a place not just to hear about Journey, but also to connect. It's everybody's kind of first day of school. It's a chance to meet people. But as soon as he talks about that, or even now, as I'm saying, hey, we'd love for you to come to discovery or whatever, for some of you, you immediately have this anxiety rise up. Like, ugh, I hate that. First day of school thing is so gross. Or going into a party with nobody I don't know. It feels so unsafe. Well, why does it feel unsafe? Well, it might feel unsafe because there are a lot of unknowns. It might feel unsafe because of your story. But a lot of times it feels safe because, as Brené Brown says, something rises up inside that says, I'm not worthy of connection. Why would I want to go to a thing like that where I'm going to be judged? Oh, maybe they may not say anything. Maybe it's refined, in particular in the South. So their words don't come out, but it's the look, it's the glance, it's the sneer. Why would I want to go to a place where that shame rises up in me? Why would I want to go to a place where I would be judged? There's so much risk in the church. We have, for the last 8 years since Journey existed, one of the central values of our church has been, how do we keep blowing through that shame, calling it out, so that we don't live a pretentious, pretend life, but that we live an honest and open existence. We are broken people, we don't get it right, but that this is the central value for us. I actually think it's why Journey will never explode and from a growth perspective. When people go, oh, you know, how many people come to your church? I was with somebody last week there. How many people come? I'm like, I don't know, because we don't really count. And well, ballpark. And I'm like, well, actually, I think we lately, because we have to move places, we have kind of a general idea. But I don't think there's this like, boom. Why? Because here, we're in the dirt of people's lives in what it means to be loving and connected in relationship. So Journey's not designed as the place to just come and be a bystander. And I understand that some of you, that's your position today. You're here and you're looking for a new church. Maybe you moved in town, or maybe something happened in a previous experience. And so you go, well, I'm not family. I'm that guy. I'm that lady. I'm a bystander. You're welcome here, because we hope that you're here with a curious heart. We hope that you're here, that you're teachable. But you're looking in on a family reunion. The church is clearly not a building for us. We have that down. The church is us as a people. So when you arrive, you just stepped into a family reunion, and you're welcome to be a part of it. And you might go, yeah, and I'm doing all the evaluation in my mind, though, as a bystander. A, are you guys legit? Is it real? B, does this really connect with me? And how do I like the music? And the preacher is very distracted most of the time. And like, you're working through like what connects with you and should this be home. And that's healthy. That's great. We all do that anywhere we go. But I hope if you are visiting with us today, and maybe you've been visiting with us for 2 years, that you hear our deep desire is that you would climb into relationship with other people. Organizationally, we do that through our small groups, but we want you to be connected and cared for. Why? You go, but there's so much risk there. The reason I've been here for 2 years is because I'm still afraid. I understand. I hear you. And the shame wells up and says, am I worthy of connection? But can I tell you, the people who are courageous, like these girls, who are courageous enough to tell their stories and enter into relationship, on the other side of that vulnerability is a beauty that you cannot imagine. And I understand it's risky. And I can't promise you it's going to turn out perfectly. But I know that God calls us to step in faith, that without faith, there is no connection. So let's go back to our friend that day on the mat under the colonnades. He's almost without hope. You get that. He's a prisoner in his own despair. And there's self-pity in his response. He has an I can't attitude. Jesus asks him, do you want to get well? And he doesn't answer with yes or no. He says, I can't. And Jesus heals him. And you might go, well, why did Jesus heal him? He didn't really say yes. He said, I can't. Maybe because there's actually something really beautiful and I can't. I can't and I won't are slightly different. I think if he says that day on the mat, I won't, Jesus says, okay. And moves away. And some of us were in that place. I'm sick and I won't. That's control. That's what Brent described. It's resentment. But I can't. I think God really likes I can't. I think when you look through these pages, the theme, the people that God seems to use the most are the I can't people. Mary, you're going to give birth to the creator of the universe. Me? How does that work? I'm 14. Gideon, I want you to step out of that threshing floor and lead soldier. Me? I can't. Moses, I want you to lead a group of people. I think you should pick somebody else. My brother's better. I can't. The I can't is where God wants you, because the I can't is the admission. I cannot do it on my own. Do you realize this is 101? You go, talk to me about faith and spell. Like, I'm an atheist. I'm kind of curious because we have a lot of atheist friends that come and join us. If that's you today and you go, I'm here, I'm exploring this faith thing. What's like, could you kind of bottom line it for me? It starts with I can't. It's this admission that says I'm not in control of the universe, and I acknowledge that I cannot solve my problems on my own. I'm in need. Which makes me receptive, and there's some kind of vulnerability and humility in there. And the man says, I can't. You go, oh yeah, but it feels tainted with self-pity. It doesn't matter. He still acknowledges that he needs someone else. And in that moment, he discovers, in the I can't, he discovers that Jesus can. And suddenly what reframes our thinking is, I can do all things through Christ, who 38 years of disability, 38 years of a shriveled body, laying on a mat, skin and bone, you can see his rib cage, his knotty knees, his scraggly beard, 38 years of Christ who strengthens me. And I was like, it's Wolverine. Like, this is the moment. Like, his just boom, his body regenerates. Maybe not quite at that level of muscle, but his body regenerates. Bam! And just picture this guy stand up. Jesus says, rise, take your mat, and walk. And when he rises, his body is being recreated. And remember John chapter 1, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The Word being Jesus. When God created the universe, he spoke it through his Son. Jesus was the Word. So the energy that came from God that created all things was somehow Jesus. Don't get it all? It's very mystical to me, but it's incredible. The Word, Jesus, created the planet. In that moment, the Word embodied in a person, Jesus, recreates a human. And he keeps doing it every day for the people who want to be healed. Rise. Be changed. And there's something in those other two phrases. Take up your mat and walk. It's not rise and be lazy. It's not rise and nothing changes. It's rise, take up your story. See, he would have been very, very comfortable with that mat. He would have been very uncomfortable with that mat. He'd been very close to that mat. He would have wanted to distance himself from that. But that mat and him, they had been together for who knows how long. We don't leave our stories behind. God doesn't delete our stories. He redeems them. Take up your mat. I was talking with one lady between the gatherings, and she said, you know, roll it up, walk with it, and use this. Hey, by the way, why are you carrying your mat? Oh, I got to tell you, I didn't look like this yesterday. Have you ever been to the Pool of Bethesda? Oh, yeah, I was there with my aunt. You remember the guy up in the corner? He was laying on the mat. Oh, yeah, he was there for a long time. That's me. I'm him. No. Yeah. Jesus healed on the Sabbath. Like the snapping of twigs, Jesus is constantly shattering cultural rules, conventional wisdom, and man-made propaganda. Jesus is endlessly disruptive. That's why this is such an important question. If you want to be healed, your life will be disrupted. Jesus will change your circumstances. Your experience will be different. So you really need to wrestle with that question. Do you want to be healed? Or do you want to stay on the mat? At least you know where the threads are. You've been there a long time. Why is Jesus endlessly, why is he so disruptive? Because he understands his children. Without curveballs and sometimes explosions in our lives, we get too comfortable. We start to play it safe. We start drifting. We fall into a trance. We start believing the lie that we are in supreme control of our domain. But Jesus calls us to a place of motion. He calls us to the impossible. I'll take that I can't, and I'm going to completely transform it into an I can. Watch. What you thought was impossible is possible with God. It's an interesting observation that Jesus didn't heal everyone that day. It seems to indicate that some of those people were actually healed later on by his disciples. Jesus didn't walk into the Pool of Bethesda and just wave his hand and go, you're all good now. Why not? He had the power to. What is it with Jesus and this healing thing? Why would he go pursue one man and ask him a specific question? Do you know that when we think of Jesus' disciples, the ones that many refer to as saints, those 12 men that followed him, 11 in particular, one committed suicide, but the rest of them that have impacted the planet, we a lot of us refer to them as saints, or the same ones whose remains are buried under great cathedrals, the ones who wrote best-selling books, actually contributing writers to the best-selling book of all of human history. When we consider these men, consider this. They were young men, several, if not most, were teenagers, and they all came from three little villages on a lake in a tiny enslaved country near the backside of an empire. And I'm reading the writing of one of them today. Why? Why these 11 fishermen and tax collectors and guys living in this little village? Why did God choose them? I don't know. Why did he choose me? Why does he choose you? The specific plan that he has for each of our lives, that's the mystery. The one thing I do know is this. It comes from the heart of God, and it flows, and he can't contain it because it's the nature of who he is. It's called grace. Regardless of where you are, that grace comes and finds you. And it's often like a liquid and flows over you. And sometimes it feels like a knock, an invitation to follow. But sometimes it comes as a question. Hey, do you want to get well? Some of you may have spiritually crawled in here today, unable to walk, but holding one last thread of hope. Can I say to you, welcome? You're in great company. You're not alone. You've been pursued. God doesn't just love you, he likes you. You go, yeah, but you don't, if you know my story. I know a lot of stories in here and out there. God doesn't just like you, but you're lovable. He doesn't just love you, he likes you. He thinks the world of you. You're created in his image. And somehow or another, you're here today. And I've learned this in my 44 years on the planet about the Bible and about his people. The combination of the two, where two or more are gathered, there he is also. Which means that Jesus is here and he's welcoming you to a cement and iron pool of healing. Are you willing to enter the adventure? And yes, carry the responsibility that comes with restoration. Or is your victimization too comfortable? Do you prefer that identity? Is your dysfunction too important? Or are you willing to see yourself differently? Are you willing to set aside the shame and be deeply known by the Spirit of God? If you get healthy, if you get saved, one thing that's important for you to understand is you may not have anything to talk about for a while. If your identity is in your sickness, your shame, your frustration with the broken flesh, your marriage, your weight, your anxiety, your career, your friendships, your children, your parents, when your identity is not in the brokenness, it shifts. And that stuff, you stop talking about it. You go, what replaces it? The glory of God. The goodness of God. The wild beyond your imagination elements of companionship with the Creator of the universe. He's that real. And on a 9-to-1 ratio, you start to praise. You start to be thankful. And you start to tell a beautiful story. Would you bow your heads and close your eyes with me?